Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I'm going to be continuing the analysis of what happened in Memphis, and I have the two best people I know to help me sort it out, Danny Siris, with 35 years of law enforcement experience, and Brian Davidson, who's a licensed private investigator in Texas, who's done brilliant work on Buffalo, Uvalde, Sandy Hook, even prepared my Appendix E for the U.S. Supreme Court. Before we get there, however, I want to begin with a couple of stories that are out there important enough to review before we turn to the main topic of discussion. Turns out the Russian military have managed to capture the HIMARS missile control system. They may regard it as a trophy as a result of strikes by the Ukrainian military. The Russian military managed not only to successfully shoot down several munitions fired by HIMARS system, but to capture the control system. Judging by its visual condition, it wasn't damaged at all, which allows them to explore its capabilities and develop a solution to counterattacks using HIMARS systems. Nice. The photographs presented, you can see the control unit taken as a trophy by the Russian military, that the block was not damaged at all, which provides an opportunity for its careful study. It's difficult to guess exactly what information such a control unit will reveal, but it's obvious we're talking about a system for guiding missiles to a target and controlling them through special protocols for military satellites and GPS control. Meanwhile, all members of the German cabinet are against dragging NATO into a Ukrainian conflict. Chancellor Scholz has vowed to prevent escalation between Russia and NATO, noting all members of the German government share this view. No NATO country directly participates in this war. None will do it. German Chancellor has taken an oath and cares about it. It should do everything to prevent Russia's war against Ukraine turning into a war between Russia and NATO, Scholz observed. We will thwart such an escalation. He commented on the foreign minister's recent phrase that European countries his own foreign minister were waging a war on Russia, not against each other. She suggested controversy be avoided on the issue of arms supplies at Kiev. It was very unfortunate she made that statement. Meanwhile, we have a report that Israel was behind a drone attack on Iranian military facilities. The Wall Street Journal reported Israel's behind a drone attack targeting a military facility in the city of Isfahan. Iranian authorities said three quadcopter drones targeted a munitions factory and that air defenses shot down one. The other two exploded above the building, causing minor damage but no casualties. The journal cited unnamed U.S. officials who said the attack came as U.S. and Israel look for new ways to contain Tehran's nuclear and military ambitions, which is rather far-fetched given that Iran has disavowed any interest in pursuing nuclear weapons, notwithstanding the opinion of many, including myself, that if Iran only had nukes, all this nonsense would be resolved in the Middle East. Israel would stop acting so arrogant and is seeking to attack different countries in the Middle East because we'd have a mutually assured destruction standoff as prevailed after World War II between the United States and the Soviet Union. In other words, in my opinion, if Iran had nukes, it would be a good thing, and the Israelis would be constrained from engaging in all this nonsense. The U.S. and Israel have been discussing ways to counter Iran and Tehran's growing military relationship with Russia. CIA Director William Burns made an unannounced visit to Israel last week to discuss Iran. U.S. wants to disrupt Iran's military supplies to Russia, though Tehran insists it hasn't provided drones to Moscow since the invasion. I think that's really a bit outrageous for the United States to want Iran not to share its military weaponry with Russia when the United States is sharing its military weaponry with Ukraine. I mean, the hypocrisy of America is mind-boggling. Meanwhile, Tehran summons Ukrainian diplomat. Tehran has protested Ukraine's charged affairs over a statement by a senior Kiev advisor about a recent drone strike at an Iranian military facility. The official suggested it was connected to the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Mikhail Podolyak, a top aide to Ukrainian President Zelensky, commented on the attack. War logic is inexorable and murderous. It bills the authors and accomplices strictly. Explosive night in Iran, drone and missile production, oil refineries, Ukraine did warn you. Kiev and Western allies have repeatedly accused Iran of supplying Russia with drones. Both Russia and Iran deny. I think it would be perfectly fine if they did. My understanding has been they have been because they have a type of drone that's not in the Russian arsenal. But that is all appropriate and good, especially given the amount of weaponry that the NATO and United States have been giving to Ukraine. I mean, the hypocrisy could not be greater. Tehran has admitted it sent drones to Moscow, but that they took place before the current hostilities, which of course began with the invasion on the 24th of February. Iran defense minister described the raid as unsuccessful, said there were no casualties, and they managed to cause only minor damage to the roof of the buildings. While Tehran stopped short of assigning blame, the journal reported, citing sources, that it was orchestrated by Israel, which would come as no surprise to anyone. Meanwhile, it's very interesting. Tucker featured Tulsi talking about developments that are well worth reporting and sharing here.
Driving force behind in Ukraine, I'll start the war in Ukraine. In January, it threatened to blow up the Nord Stream pipelines so that Russia couldn't send gas to Europe. Remember this?
I want to be clear with you today. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward.
So then in September, somebody blew up the pipelines, and that was the biggest man-made environmental disaster in history. If you're worried about climate change, you should be in tears. because of the amount of carbon that emitted into the atmosphere. So it was pretty obvious to us the Biden administration was involved in this. He said that, and we were immediately denounced by the entire left and the entire media as agents of Putin. Why are they doing that? And by the way, when we actually join this war in force, what will they do to anyone who objects to it? Ooh, they're going to punish people. You watch. But with this in mind, we were a little bit surprised to see Toria Nuland essentially admit last week that she did it. Watch this.
Senator Cruz, like you, I am, and I think the administration is very gratified to know that Nord Stream 2 is now, as you like to say, a hunk of metal at the bottom of the sea.
Well, she's excited about it. When it happened, they said, we're upset about it. We have no idea who did this. And if you think we had a hand in it, you're Putin. What are we watching here? Tulsi Gabbard is a former presidential candidate. She joins us tonight. Congressman, thank you so much for coming on. So now they're basically admitting it and nobody is saying anything? Why?
I think there's two really important things for the American people to take away from what you have just outlined here. Number one is that statement from Victoria Nuland just exposed her and the administration's truth, which is that they have been lying to us all along about this. There's no way the United States was not either involved or knew about this or at the very minimum approved it. So they've been lying to us. They've been deceiving us, saying, hey, look, the United States had absolutely nothing to do with this, while also trying to sell us the absurd lie that, well, of course, Russia somehow bombed their own, exploded their own energy infrastructure to hurt their own economic interests. It just shows how stupid they think we are that we would buy such an absurd argument. Their lying to us shows us yet again that we can't trust anything that they're saying. We can't trust any of these narratives that are coming out of the mainstream media. The second thing that's important to recognize that is very dangerous is that they are setting a precedent through what her statements are and their actions that now that it is acceptable to go and essentially use sabotage against infrastructure as an acceptable strategy. So we have to look at our own vulnerabilities in this area, whether it's the undersea cables, our communication systems, our financial systems, our own power grid and energy system vulnerabilities. The list goes on and on. The argument is very clear. Hey, look, if it's okay to go after and bomb and destroy Russia's oil and gas infrastructure,
okay,
why would not then be okay for someone else to come and attack our own, exploit our own vulnerabilities here? So this is the position that the warmongers in Washington have put us into. We, the American people, all in the name of saying, hey, we're doing this to protect you. We're trying to protect democracy. But their actions are making us less safe and undermining our democracy, because we cannot have a functioning democracy if we can't trust what our leaders are telling us.
Well, and they don't care about democracy at all. But mark my words, anyone who calls them out on their lies, they've already denounced you, for example, as a disloyal American who serves a country in uniform. If this war accelerates, they will go after you, and everyone else has called them on their lies.
That's up to the American people. We're the old, like, where is their hope? The hope lies in our hands to fire, get rid of these, throw these lying, warmongering politicians out of office and stop listening to the crap the mainstream media and big tech is putting out and take a stand for the truth for our country and for our security and freedom.
Amen. Okay, great to see you tonight. Thank you.
Thanks, Tucker.
The only problem being that, of course, the American people may be sick of the Biden admin. That was already clear in 2020, we did not want Joe Biden. Then in 2022, the evidence, the country being headed in the wrong direction, a reliable indicator in the past of how a midterm election would come out, was up to 85% convinced the country was going in the wrong directions. Until we get our electoral system straight, get rid of the electronic voting machines, return to paper ballots and hand counts, I don't think there's a chance we're going to be able to get out from under the despotism of the Democrat administration. Tulsi, by the way, I believe will be Trump's running mate. I'm certain he wants to run with a woman. I think she is his most likely candidate. Carrie Lake, I believe, has a great future, but she's way too inexperienced and has never held a formal position in government. So, well, I think she has a fantastic future. Her time is yet to come. Meanwhile, Zelensky sent out a government decree to destroy all information on Hunter Biden's Metabiota company on the same day as a Russian invasion A fire was even spotted outside its intel headquarters. Ukrainian President Zelensky ordered officials to destroy all information on Hunter Biden's company the same day Russia invaded, 24 February. He sent out this document, development. Remember when the Pentagon, this is D.C. Drano tweeting, remember when the Pentagon confirmed the U.S. partner with 46 Ukrainian bioweapon labs and Hunter Biden secured millions for one of the labs, Metabiota? Well, now we have a 2/24/22 letter from Zelensky ordering the destruction of all government files for Metabiota. I'm sure it's nothing. Here's another. Did Zelensky keep some of the more incriminating documents against Hunter at Metabiota and Burisma to use as extortion against Joe Biden to get more money and weapons? We all know the answer. Zelensky sent out a decree on 24 Feb for government officials to destroy all information on the Ukrainian Research Anti-Plague Institute, Menshnikov Institute of Health of Ukraine, and the Zytomyr Regional Laboratory Senator of the Ministry of Health, who all work with Metabiota. These docs were originally posted in June of 2022, but today we can confirm they are authentic. And today we're including docs from Hunter Biden's laptop discussing the ownership percentage of Metabiota in his organization. This government doc is confirmed as authentic by XR Vision. And we have several of the docs. The Ministry of Defense, with the participation of specialists of the Security Service of Ukraine in connection with the conduct of martial law in Ukraine from February 24th, in accord with a decree of the President of Ukraine, organized the devastating destruction of personal files of servicemen, employees, and staff of the State Institution, Center for Public Health, the Ministry of Health of Ukraine, Ukrainian Research Anti-Plague Institute, I Menshnikov of the Ministry of Health of Ukraine, Zytomyr Regional and Laboratory Centers of the Ministry of Health of Ukraine, which work together with scientists Metabiota. Zelensky was seeking to erase all documents associated with Hunter Biden's company before the war, and Ukrainian officials started burning the documents that very day. Clandestine tweets. Y'all remember when the mainstream was showing the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense and Military Intelligence headquarters burning documents outside their buildings? On 2/24/22, the same day the Zelensky decree seen above, they were covering up their affiliation to U.S. biological malfeasance. Here's an image of them burning the docs. This was the scene at the military and intelligence headquarters. Wow. Meanwhile, the Gateway Pundit asks for us to pray for them because they're releasing documents in the coming days revealing criminal acts by the president and his son, Hunter. And they are apprehensive about retaliation. They are going forward, but they want us to know what's happening. Earlier today, Joe Hoft at the Gateway Pundit reported on newly discovered classified docs and content found on Hunter's laptop. This is a second report in our expose revealing its contents. This comes after the New York Post, Miranda Devine, reported on an email from the laptop that appeared to include classified material from the government. The Gateway Pundit released them in the last 24 hours. First, exclusive. Second, Hunter Biden email from laptop with classified information uncovered. Hunter shared with Ukraine business colleagues. More coming. Here it is, the smoking gun, the 20-point email of classified information from his father that Hunter Biden sent to Burisma board member in April of 2014. Here's another, third Hunter Biden email from laptop with classified information uncovered, classified White House conference call shared with Hunter's Ukrainian business partners, and more are coming. The FBI has been holding the Hunter laptop since 2019. They have failed to act on the classified material shared by Hunter with his business associates and foreign operatives. This was criminal conduct. The FBI knows this and covered it up until now. The Gateway Pundit will expose this information in a series of reports this week. We're asking for your prayers. These reports implicate the sitting president and his son in several major criminal acts and likely acts of treason and espionage. We understand this information will shake up Washington. Our intent is to only to provide the truth to the American people. We're also wise enough to know there are those who do not want this information published, many of whom are in very high position. Meanwhile, Biden's new border policy using a loophole to fast-track migrants, where a former official with a Border Patrol calls the Biden explanation bullshit. The Department of Homeland Security program to allow migrants that would otherwise be expelled if they crossed illegally isn't the success the Biden admin claims it to be, according to a former senior official. President Biden announced January 5th the expansion of Title 42, a Trump-era order used to expel illegal migrants to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, including Venezuelans, Cubans, Nicaraguans, and Haitians. The plan allows for 30,000 of those nationalities to enter the country using parole authority, permitting them to stay for a period of 2 years as long as they have a sponsor, and permits migrants who would otherwise be expelled under Title 42 to use CBP-1, a mobile app, to book an appointment at a port of entry to quickly enter the country. These expanded border enforcement measures are working, DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said. It's incomprehensible that states that stand to benefit from these highly effective enforcement measures are seeking to block them and cause more irregular migration at our southern border. Former Deputy DHS Secretary Ken Cicilline called Mayorkas' statement bullshit in a phone interview. Bullshit numbers are not down, Cariselli said. They're at record levels, even if they went down from those record levels in the absence of the previous month record. It's still the record level. They're literally importing an entire state of the United States of America every couple of months worth of people. We can't absorb this. And they know that. And that tells you their intent is to undermine what everybody grew up thinking of as America. U.S. Customs and Border Protection recorded more than 2.3 million migrant encounters in fiscal year 2022 and more than a quarter million, 250,000 in December alone, the highest month on record. They're using parole, much like the Obama admin did DACA. That's creating a loophole you can drive a truck through. What security comes from this? He can't identify any security that comes from this. He can't identify any reducing flow of illegals coming to the country that he won't admit. Yeah, right, he's facilitating it. The guy is an official government human trafficker, Cicilline added. Retired Deputy Patrol Agent in charge of the El Paso Station, Clay Thomas, echoed, Mayorkas isn't providing the full picture of what's happening at the southern border. Everything's not going great, Thomas said. This has been implemented. There's no metric to determine whether it's a success or not. To determine success on something, you have to give it time, a period of time to show a metric of success. I would assume that would be no less than 3 to 6 months to be able to look and see how it's working to problem solve it. To call this a success this early on, after something is just being implemented, is unreasonable. More than 7,500 Cuban, Nicaraguans, and Haitians have so far been approved through the parole program, according to CNN. That number is separate for those admitted to CBP-1. Former Acting Customs and Protection Agency Commissioner Mark Morgan believes the process to admit those who would otherwise be expelled is illegal, he told the Daily Caller. They are legalizing otherwise illegal activity and then claiming victory. So the numbers of those illegally entering is between the ports of entry significantly recede. Watch how the numbers at our ports of entry increase in kind. It's an unlawful, perverse shell game serving to mask a crisis rather than address it in any meaningful way. They haven't put forth a single policy to deter or disincentivize the flow, nor to insert integrity back into a broken system through ending of catch and release. They simply transferred their massive release strategy to the ports of entry. DHS has secretly been using CBP-1 to admit migrants of more than 100 nationalities into the country for months. Center of Immigration Studies Senior National Security Fellow Todd Berensman told the Daily Caller after making the observation in Mexico before the program launched. Let me add now, by the way, that the goal appears to be to bring in 100 million illegals to permanently change the demographics of the United States. It's turning on a faucet full and letting it run unabated. Meanwhile, Trump has announced he's going to send illegal migrants straight back home. As a report indicates, nearly 300,000 gotaways aborted border agents in less than 4 months. Trump, during a campaign speech in South Carolina, vowed if elected, he would send illegal immigrants straight back home. As reports indicate, nearly 300,000 gotaways escaped into the country after crossing the border since October. Trump, who's seeking the Republican nomination in 2024, spoke about the border crisis that has exponentially worsened during the Biden admin. He echoed his past statements that other countries aren't sending their best when it comes to the migrant surge and that the situation needs to get straightened out fast. They're sending people who are killers, murderers, rapists. They're saying, frankly, terrorists. Terrorists are coming on their own, and frankly, we can't allow this to happen. So the illegal border crossers are going to be sent right back home, he said, those bad ones especially, and they're going to go fast. Here's Jack Masubic tweeting, breaking, we have to remove a lot of people very, very fast. They're sending people who are killers, murderers. They're sending rapists. I think Trump's got it exactly right. This is going to go down well. This will be a very important plank as he runs for another term as president of the United States. Now we come to the major topic for today and the reason why I have Danny Suris and Brian Davidson back with me today. I received a comment on the show from Monday with Danny and John Kamen. Dr. Fetzer, I strongly disagree the incident is fake. Firstly, it doesn't play into the typical white officer unnamed black man narrative. In fact, it undermined those narratives of racist white officers by having 5 black officers arrested for murder. Second, the poll camera and body cam caught the incident from multiple angles. The meeting was horrific, but honestly, not that unusual, sadly. I think there is a legitimate argument that the incident has been amplified, but I disagree that it's fake in its entirety. I also point out that, yes, procedures were not followed. This is why multiple firefighters and police officers have been fired or lost their jobs. For the point made by Danny that he couldn't find them in a database, well, could the database be wrong? I mean, I've been told I had an arrest warrant in a country, in a county I'd never been in, and had to send in fingerprints to resolve the situation. These database inaccuracies aren't dispositive of anything. If anything, it shows the database itself isn't always accurate. I think what this meeting showed more than anything is the lowered standard that has been employed in hiring our police officers now. They acted like gangbangers. What possible reason would the system fake such a video? As I mentioned, it undermines the entire narrative that all these meetings are racist whites. I think it actually brings out the true issue that police brutality is a real thing and honestly has little to do with race. Well, I appreciated that comment and feedback. Just for the record, we weren't arguing that the videos were fake. We were arguing that what was going on appeared to be staged. Let me just give you an illustration. I probably had a dozen or more traffic stops. In every single case, the officer was emphatic that I should remain in my vehicle. And then he would ask me for my driver's license and registration. But if on one occasion when I sought to get out of the car, he was emphatic for me to get back in the car. So when you got these cops dragging this guy out of the car, something is terribly, terribly wrong. Then, as Danny observed, since he was pepper sprayed, which would virtually blind him, his getting up and running away, which Danny observed was a mistake on his part, looks very, very odd, because if he couldn't see, how the hell is he going to be able to run away? the other video now, it turns out they had a lot more than we actually played during that show about, you know, the cops coming to the corner where they beat the hell out of him, and we can see several kicks to the head, which I believe were the fatal blows that were struck. But the fact is there were violation after violation of police procedure here that made it look as though this is somehow staged or contrived. Just to be clear, we're not disputing the authenticity of the videos, although Brian may have a point or two to make about that. Let me begin with Danny. Danny, you've heard the critique here. I'm very interested and eager to get more from you about it and whether you've been had any more success in tracking down these five officers who appeared to you to be ghosts in terms of data accessible via the internet. Danny.
Yeah, hello, sir. Very good. Hello to your guests, too, Brian. I was going to say, no, I haven't changed at all, and I don't agree with that comment. What I do is I appreciate his feedback, but he's missing a lot of things, and he also doesn't understand. Now, everybody in this that lives in the United States has an electronic fingerprint, and they have several electronic fingerprints, as a matter of fact. So when I pull this information, there are several databases that I pull from to find people. And unfortunately, everybody in the United States, just to give a little background, you know, we all have cell phones, we have automobiles, we pay utility bills, you know, we pay rent, we pay a mortgage. You know, it just goes on and on with the different payments that we have to make and the different things we have to do electronically to live in our current society. Now, am I happy that this is that way? No, I'm not. Sometimes I wish we could go back in time before we had computers, when we had a lot more privacy than we have now. But unfortunately, that is the way it is. So any human that I know that I look up, I can find basically everything about them, from the car they drive to the driving record to whatever it is. It's just the way that it is. And when I did a background on the situation, which is usually what I do anytime I find any one of these high-profile events, and even some low-profile events, I can find all the players that are involved in them when it's a real event. You know, I can see everything about that person, and often I can figure out things by looking at somebody's background and, you know, what they've done in their life, so on and so forth, where they've gone to school, kind of jobs they've had, and things like that. Well, when I looked at that whole entire situation, sir, and I spent extensive time, I got two pages of notes here, looking at it, I looked up everybody. And I mean, just everybody that was part of that scene and that whole entire event, even the police chief. And the police chief comes out perfectly. I can see the police chief's background. I'm not going to give it out on air, but I will say she was from Atlanta and came over from Atlanta, got hired on to Memphis, and went there. And so she has a law enforcement credential in her background. I can see her college, everything that she does, you know, even the car she drives. And she's legit. And her husband works for a reputable company. I mean, he does a reputable job and has done so for years. So there's no problem there. And even the criminal in this circumstances, which I found was really interesting, the victim, if you want to call it, but it was actually the guy being arrested. I actually found him, and he lives in Sacramento, California, and has an extensive recent history in the Sacramento area of California. He's lived in adjacent states around Memphis, and he was from Memphis prior, several years ago, but he hasn't been there in a while. But he is from Sacramento. And I also looked into his background, and, you know, he got arrested on a felony, and it was knocked down to a misdemeanor. But he was arrested on this felony, which is pretty egregious. He has a history of irresponsibility, including not paying traffic tickets. So he does have a history and a run-in with the law, and he's had several run-ins with the law. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's in his background, and, you know, that's just the way it happened. So it's very interesting that I found him and was able to get a 100% identification on him. So those two people in the whole entire thing were actually who they say they are.
Danny, let me just interrupt with one question. Was there anything about his background that would cause police in the normal performance of their duty to be alarmed and treat him differently than they would any other traffic stop?
Well, I'm not really sure if they would be alarmed. He didn't have any extremely violent things in his background. I'll tell you the one thing he did. He had a child endangerment, and he has a history of financial irresponsibility in his background. But, you know, he doesn't have any, you know, like gang.
Let me just say my computer crashed. I'm trying to get Danny and Brian back here, but it'll take just a second to set things back up. Yes. Yes. Can you hear me now, Mitchell? Can you hear me? Okay, we're good. All right, my computer crashed. I don't think this was coincidental. Just as Danny was talking about these key questions about whether there were anything about this Nichols guy that would have led to the police treating him differently, I'm going to do my best to get them back on the line here, and we'll see if we can go from here. It's fascinating to have such excellent people here as Brian and Danny, and I'm going to see what we can do to get everything back in shape. I'm going to call them and ask them to call in because we can do it from in that fashion. Let me do that. Danny called the number, call in. They hit my computer and took up my Zoom. 540-352-4452. Really? Right. Right. 540-352-4452. Yeah, call right now. Thanks. Calling Brian now to get him on. Brian, they took out my Zoom. Please call this number and we'll continue the conversation. 540-352-4452. Thanks. Did I cut you off prematurely? Yeah, go ahead and call in. 540-352-4452. Thank you. Okay, Mitchell, we should have them now. But please. Gregory, I'll call you when I'm free. I'm on the air. I'll call you. So let me know when they show up, Mitchell, and we'll continue the conversation. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? You have them. Are you there, Mitchell? Mitchell, can you hear me? Mitchell, what happened?
I don't know.
I don't know. I know of, Jim.
Okay. I got
here's
hit.
Danny and...
You got me and Brian now?
Yeah, we got everybody here for you.
Okay, thank you, thank you. Danny, continue your conversation. Sorry about that. Okay. I think I have a pretty good idea what's going on. Go ahead, Danny.
Can everybody hear me okay now?
Yeah. You're good. You're saying you did the research and you found the chief and you found the victim and you got the details and you said he did have some kind of child abuse or something, but... But Danny, my inference is there was nothing there that would have caused alarm as though he would be a threat to the police that they'd open the door and haul him out. Because as I was explaining, in any stop I've ever had, and I've had my share, they were insistent I stay in the car and not get out. So to me, this is completely bizarre. Your thoughts?
Well, normally during a traffic stop, you always want the person to stay in the car because you can control the suspect. It's safer for the officer and it's safer for the actual person that's getting pulled over to stay in the car. You can control the scene. You never want somebody getting out of the car because then that adds officer safety. You have to control the suspect. You don't know what they're going to do, and you can control them when you're in the car. But what I was saying about the suspect is he had an issue with child endangerment. So
yeah,
that's over a child, his child. He was sued for child support. So he had some other things besides that in his background that showed some financial irresponsibility for sure. But the reason why they pulled him out of the car is because they're saying he was initially stopped for reckless driving. We do not know, or are they not giving the circumstances for that stop? We don't know if he fled an accident. We don't know if he was just simply swerving or driving recklessly while going down the road. We don't know any of those circumstances because they're not giving them out. And what I found very troubling is when they interviewed the chief, her short comment on television was that she did not know what the reason was for the initial stop. It wasn't clear. And I found that a very troubling thing for a chief of police in a high profile situation to say at that time over the air, because the chief knows everything. The chief has access to the radio calls. The chief would be briefed on, you know, all the circumstances and would know and easily could figure out or find out what was going on before they went on television and got asked a question like that. So I've never heard a chief say, I don't know why they stopped him. So we don't have the circumstances, but reckless driving can be a felony depending on what level the reckless driving was at. So it just kind of depends on the circumstances. And there was a lot of circumstances around that stop, if we're going to go into it, that I would like to talk about that did not make sense prior to him pulling him out of the car and when they pulled him out of the car. But, you know, it was definitely, they were acting like it was a felony stop. So that would be, it was the severe version of the reckless driving. But again, they didn't give out yet, or they have not given out any details about the actual reason for the traffic stop other than it was reckless driving, sir.
Very, very good, Danny. Very good. Brian, I'd like you to pick up there and offer thoughts you have about any aspect of this, please.
Well, okay, so your audience may know that I don't exactly sit in front of the television and watch it. I was literally at your house when this broke, and the first thing I noticed was that the mask on the time and date stamp looked very strange to me. And that was on the Sean Hannity broadcast. I photographed it real quick. The mask is how you put the time and date stamp on the video. I've since researched that, and I believe that Sean Hannity just simply had a low resolution version that interpreted that mask behind those letters and the time and date stamp differently than I have normally seen on Axos body cam footage. So my initial indication led me to believe it was just a false flag, but that was literally 20 seconds of watching Sean Hannity's coverage of it. Other than that, I didn't pick up the case until this morning. And after now spending a few hours on the video, I am of the opinion that while there is something strange about it, there was indeed a man that was beaten pretty good by these officers underneath the surveillance video. We have four different cameras, four different body cams on it, and all of them seem to indicate a general correspondence. What I was concerned about was that the pan, tilt, zoom camera used from the street view that was artificially modified to zoom in on that particular location where the beating took place. But now I think that maybe that camera is just designed to pick up motion and zoomed in on it. So I watched what appeared to be 4 or 5 different officers involved in a pretty serious beating. I also watched the subject, Mr. Nichols, allegedly being pulled out of the vehicle by unmarked police cars. And let me see, those guys were part of an organized crime unit that works in Memphis. They call themselves, it's my understanding, they call themselves the Scorpions. So this guy was being watched. Now, rumors have it that he was picked up for reckless driving, or at least stopped for reckless driving. He does have some speeding convictions, one from 2018 and one from 2014. The 2018 was in California, where he's got ties to Sacramento in terms of some kinfolk, that brothers possibly and some sisters that live in the Sacramento area. There's also a child support judgment on him in the Sacramento area, Yolo County in Sacramento. So he was born in 1993, June 5th, I believe. And what I'm seeing is that I have a death certificate that appears official. It was filed with Social Security and it's dated the 10th of January. So the beating, according to the Axos video cameras, happened on the 7th, and we have a deceased report happening on the 10th, which may make sense. But what starts to smell funny about these serious events was that you don't have the GoFundMe set up until just a few days ago. And basically, the GoFundMe that was set up by Rovon Nichols, who lives in the Memphis area, has now collected 34,000 donations totaling $1,331,960, which is an average of $39.17 per donation to this particular event. And what is also interesting about the GoFundMe is that it doesn't show a deceased, the photograph on the GoFundMe doesn't show, it's titled the Tyre Nichols Memorial, but it makes you believe that he's still alive and suffering treatment. The photograph that they've used was taken from a hospital bed of a man who had suffered a severe beating, allegedly Tyre Nichols. So to me, where this gets to be a little hairy is not the actual video of the event. And by the way, when I went ahead and did some research, I found that the story broke approximately 7 days ago in your major media news outlets, not necessarily local. So you've got your CNN and your New York Times that break the story basically on a Friday night about 6 p.m. that causes this thing to go viral. Now, usually when you plant when a story breaks loose like that, it's not done on a Friday at 6 p.m. unless you're trying to organize some type of response or elicit some type of response. So they waited until a Friday night to release it. Obviously, it's going to inflame Black people. It's designed to inflame Black people. It's nothing new to have a guy get pulled over and roughed up by some cops. And I can tell you that based on my opinion, although I haven't been a police officer, I'm just a private investigator, he was resisting. It did cause him to get pepper sprayed and some of the officers to get some of that pepper spray also in their eyes. They were pretty upset about it. What I have found on the officers is that they were between 24 and 30 years old. Pretty tough dudes. Serious men with the serious capability to do some damage. I don't know how well their training was. I'd like to see their training and discipline records. Like I said before, the rumor was that Nichols worked with, or the rumor that's breaking out in Memphis is that Nichols worked with one of the officers' wives at a FedEx facility, and that there was perhaps something inappropriate going on. And so whether Nichols was warned or not, or whether this was he was pulled over leaving work at FedEx, I don't know. But it does appear the way he was pulled out of that car, like either they had seen something egregious, which I don't think, because Nichols doesn't have he's got some speeding tickets, but he doesn't have a real criminal history in terms of looking like he's a gangbanger or anything like that. He comes from a family, been around. I don't have any reason to believe he was involved in any illicit activities. I mean, I've been picked up for speeding. It's no big deal. I guess this speculation theory that's beginning to gain some traction is that Nichols was sleeping with one of the officers' wives and they retaliated, which would explain the heavy-handed behavior. Maybe. It still doesn't exonerate anybody. But I think what bothers me about this is that you've got a death that took place on the 10th that's not broken until what the 20, what was Friday? Today's the 1st. It was broken on Friday. So that was Friday, January 27th. So I see something strange about 17 days of this thing being, well, let's say that the word was out, but it just hadn't been hit. So somebody took the information and shared it with these mainstream media outlets. I suspect it was Rovon Wells, who is the mother, who set up the GoFundMe account that's raised $1.3 million. Other than that, I don't really know what to tell you. Let's see if there's anything else in my notes about this.
Brian, hold that thought. We'll be right back with Brian Davidson and Danny Siris after this break.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But
time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Brian, did you have a further thought you wanted to add before I return to Danny?
No, just in conclusion, I guess I'd say at this point, my research indicates that this thing has been artificially amplified to stir up a particular crowd or zone of the American audience in some sort of anti-police sentiment, whether they're black or whether they're white. Yeah. The author of the email sent to you is correct in that it doesn't fit the normal narrative. But then again, neither did the Half Moon Bay shooting that just recently happened that doesn't fit the normal narrative. They used Asian victims and an Asian shooter. So I do suspect that the people that are in charge of your normal false flag are changing the narrative up for the purposes of it. It's just too easy for people like us to sniff it out. But in my opinion, what I think is going on here is that this Nichols beating has been amplified by the mainstream media for the purposes of stirring up a particular crowd and causing unrest. Why they do it is usually, in my opinion, to take the focus off of some other area. And for that reason, I would say it does qualify as a false flag, because something like this wouldn't normally be covered except maybe locally. And it certainly wouldn't be picked up by the New York Times and CNN first, to break the story big on a Friday night at 6 p.m. prior to a weekend. So for that reason, I think that they've taken an event that shouldn't have taken place and built it and amplified it out. And now you've got your 39,000 donators who have given on average of 40, probably 60% of them are anonymous donors. And we see this all over with false flag shootings, where this is the way that they funnel money to these, in other situations, the way they funnel money to crisis actors and victims to make sure that they they keep the lid on the event. So I'm seeing a lot of the patterns, but I think that in this case, they used a video that was legit, and then it took them from the 10th or the 7th until the 27th to figure out how they were going to use it and amplify it in the media to get their desired outcome, which is
right. I'm especially interested in how you ferreted out that it may have been his having an affair with one of the cops' wives, which would certainly potentially explain what the hell's going on here and why they treated him so brutally. I mean, it was grossly offensive. This obviously was a violation of all kinds of police procedure, but it would certainly explain the motivation if they were extracting revenge. How were you able to ascertain that was the case?
From what I'm reading, it broke forth on a controversial radio talk show in Memphis with an inbound caller who said they worked together. So, is it hearsay? Yeah,
not true.
Does it add a little color? I don't know.
Very, very interesting. Danny, your thoughts? And apparently Brian was able to find information about police. I'm interested in that difference. But Danny, pick up wherever you like.
Yeah, there's quite a bit, Dr. Fetzer, I'd like to go through from the stop to some of the things he just said. He did not mention the child endangerment charge and arrest that he had, where he got arrested for a felony. It was knocked down to a misdemeanor. Again, that's not a violent offense. It was on the child, but, you know, not like he was saying, it's not, you know, like a violent towards, you know, like he didn't rob a bank or any of those kind of things, but he does have a history of showing financial irresponsibility. But I guess I got to jump forward and then come back to the traffic stop. The problem in what I was explaining is how everybody has a fingerprint, okay? So just like Brian, I was able to research and look into the background of the suspect or the victim, whatever you want to call it, as well as the police chief, okay? And I was also able to get a few other names on the department, okay, that I was able to look them up, and I was able to pull up their background. So why is that important, okay? What's the difference? They weren't involved in this, okay? I always pull up and look at other departments adjacent, and I try to find names of officers or people that, and just take a quick look to make sure I can find them. And I always do. Okay. That I really want to drive that point home. But in this case, the five officers that they put their names on the air, okay, and showed their photographs, when I did the standard an in-depth background check on all of them using all of my databases and the way I find these guys, it's very important to understand, Dr. Fetzer, that they all come up as ghosts. Now, I was able to find the names. Okay, there are a few people with a couple of them, especially the one that has the very popular last name of Smith, where there's multiple names. And it took a little while to run down all of the possibilities in the area of everybody that had that name. And I could not identify that person by age, and I could not get by photograph. So what I'm telling you is that person does not exist. The other four, though, have a quite not so much common first and last name, and they were much easier. And usually there was either nobody with that name or one or two people in that entire area that had that name, but the ages were way off. And I ran down each one, and it was not the person that they're showing on the news. They didn't have the right background. They had the different job. They had a different job history. They were a completely different person and lived in a different town. But I checked all the areas around there. And so what I'm trying to say that's very important is all these five black officers came up as a ghost. They came up not existent. They did not exist. Just like in when we looked up into the George Floyd, none of them came up. Okay. Why is it that I can't find all their law enforcement credentials and all the usual things that I can find when I look up a police officer? I can look up everything. I can see their job history. And these guys came up with nothing. So as soon as I saw that one after another, after another, after another, not coming up, but the chief came up and the victim came up, I knew there was a major, major problem because, you know, they always come up every single time they come up, except when we look into these high profile false flag events, there's always people that are subject to these events that come up as a ghost. And only in these high profile events, when I look up or look into the low profile events that don't make the major media, I look up, I can see all the characters that are involved. I can see everybody, but not this time again. So that's what got me on the trail right away of thinking there's a lot of problems. I would, though, sir, like to go into some highlights of the traffic stop as I talked about last time. And into the video. So would you like to go over that now, or do you want to wait for a later segment?
Sure. No, this is fine, Danny. Go ahead.
Okay, so everybody has to understand, on a traffic stop, we've all been stopped by the police at one time or another in our life. Sometimes more, some people more often because their driving habits aren't so good. Sometimes people are, you know, stopped once or twice in a lifetime, right? When you get stopped by the police, everybody sees the light in the window. You hear the siren sometimes, and you pull over to the right, okay? So you have to stop. That is called a primary unit. When he makes a traffic stop behind you and you turn on the lights and you pull over, a motorist, you're the primary officer or deputy that's making that traffic stop, okay? So you're the primary. When other units show up after you, okay, those are called the secondary units or backup units, okay? And there's also other nicknames as well that different departments use. But it's primary and then secondary and backup that shows up. Okay. Now, if everybody looks at this video, what was very strange to me was that when they had him stop the primary, there's only one guy in the beginning that has a body camera on. And they all have body cameras, but this one particular guy was the only one that they released. Okay. And that was key. There was no other body cams going, and I haven't seen any later developments of more body cams out yet. That doesn't mean that might not try to release some, but I just haven't seen them. There's one, and he's driving in his vehicle, and he's heading to the scene talking on the radio. So it's his body camera is running while he's actually driving to the scene of the traffic stop. He's not there. Okay. So what happens is he pulls up to the scene and the suspect is already stopped. And this is a key point. He is not the primary. In other words, he is not the one that initiated the stop. He didn't find the suspect. Okay. He is secondary or backup. He's showing up after the fact, after the scene is already going and the suspect has already been stopped by a primary. Okay. When he pulls up, I find it very interesting that he is able to pull up right behind the suspect's vehicle, right where the primary would stop. So in other words, when an officer stops behind the car, he's obviously right behind the car on your bumper. He moves a little bit adjacent to the left to give himself a little bit of cover should he have to fall back on the vehicle, often cocking his vehicle a little bit with the front end to the left, rear end to the right. So it's just so you have a little safety in case you have to flee back behind your vehicle. So that is what's called the primary position to stop or make a traffic stop, okay? It's very common. Everybody can kind of see that in their head. But what happens is he pulls into that primary spot, even though he's late to the game. He's backup. He's secondary. He's not the primary. And for some reason, the primary is not in the picture. The primaries are over on the passenger side or out around the front of the vehicle, but they're not in the primary spot, and there's no vehicle there. And I find it kind of weird that there's no spot, there's an open spot right behind the suspect's vehicle on his bumper, right adjacent to the front door. So he pulls right in. So in other words, this scene was going on before he got there, and it's almost like everybody was waiting, okay, like they were waiting for him to show up to continue or go ahead and slip into a primary and make the stop. And that makes no sense. There should have already been an officer at the door talking to the suspect, controlling, and in charge, because that's the primary who made that stop. He would be the one running the traffic stop, and he would be the one talking to the suspect, and the guy we see that pulls up should be secondary or backup, okay? But he's not. When he pulls up, he jumps right out of his car. He walks right up to the door, okay? There's no primary there at all, and he walks right up to the door and opens the door and starts cussing and yelling at the guy and dragging the guy out of the car, almost like he's primary and he witnessed the suspect just do something reckless or whatever. And he's not. He is not. He was not in the primary scene. He showed up as a secondary, but he just takes over as the primary and goes and grabs the guy with, and you can't even see the other officers in this situation. So that's just not how a traffic stop works. The person that lights up or pulls over the suspect is in charge and handles the suspect. Okay, and then when you roll in after, you're often parked behind him or adjacent to him, and you come up as backup, and you will come up and fit in some way, or you will say, hey, I'm here, you know, and you can kind of quickly get motion where they want you to go or what you want to do, because you are not the primary. The primary is running the traffic stop, and you're there to back him up. So that is very, very suspect to me, that situation. I've watched it over and over again. I would ask anybody to go ahead and watch the video. You can see that. Now, he pulls him right out of the car. And as soon as he gets him out of the car and he gets him on the ground, there's some banter going on about, the suspect says the usual, I ain't done nothing. Why am I getting out of the car? Why are you doing this? Well, they've decided that they're going to at least take him into custody and cuff him. Okay. I haven't heard the words, you're under arrest. Okay. But I heard, they told him to lay on the ground, put your hands behind your back. Well, he doesn't want to do that. He's fighting and he's twisting to the left, looking up at the guy with the body camera. And he keeps asking him why and negotiating with him, like, why am I doing this? Why do I have to do this? Well, right there at that point, if they were going to cuff him and there's five guys there, they would have just kept the force on him and they would have just initiated and put the handcuffs on him. But they kind of used force to get him out of the car. They backed off with the force and they stopped their efforts for a few seconds to put the handcuffs. Now, once you start that effort, you're going to stay on the suspect 100% with help till you get those cuffs on. You want to control the suspect. You want to get him cuffed so he can't reach into his pockets. He can't cause any problems. And then you're going to do your talking. Then you're going to do your bantering. But I found it kind of strange that he didn't have any help to put the cuffs on. There should have been a bunch of guys right on the guy when they pulled him out of the car. As a matter of fact, usually that's timed. And they'll be, the primary will be in charge. He will tell everybody, I'm going to pull the suspect out of the car. Let's be ready. And they all get ready and they're all going to have a role on what they're going to do to control that suspect as they pull him out of the car. None of that happened in this case. He pulled him out of the car. They weren't helping him at first cuff the guy. They weren't muscling him, trying to hold arms and legs and hold him to the ground. It was just this one guy with a body camera. And of course, the man did not comply. In the very next section, he hits him with a dose of pepper spray at almost point blank range. Okay, within about 8 inches. He even does like what I call the hairspray method, where not only does he hit him straight in the face, but he kind of rotates his hand in a clockwise motion and sprays him directly in the face. I mean, a full 100% blast of pepper spray. And I'd like to point out that the pepper spray that police use is extremely hot. Okay, the Jovals are very hot on that. And immediately when you get hit anywhere in the face with pepper spray, and I would like to tell the audience, if you've never been hit with pepper spray, it's extremely, extremely painful. As a matter of fact, if you even put some on the tip of your pinky or one of your fingers and rub it just under your eye, okay, your eye will immediately tear and slam shut, okay, immediately. And I remember in training when they did that, they wiped a little on our eyes, and immediately you go to tear and you can't see. Your eye closes down just from the fumes of the pepper spray. It is so strong. And he took it right in the face, both eyes right up the nostril, okay, with a really long blast of pepper spray. This stuff is so powerful that will immediately slam the eyes shut. The burning is such an intense burning sensation that immediately you will start howling in pain, but the eyes will slam shut. And often it's hard for the suspect to breathe because the fumes will go up the nose, burn the lungs, it gets into your esophagus, and it causes profuse coughing. And a lot of times somebody can't even talk when they get hit with pepper spray at that range because it's such an intense burning. It basically shuts down a person's willing to fight, and you cannot see. Well, after he gets hit with this direct pepper spray blast, there's still just a little banter. He's yelling, and then he does this little worm move. I don't know how to really say it, but he won't lay in his back. He doesn't want to lay in his back. He's fighting. He twists, stands up. Okay, so he stands on his feet after this hit with pepper spray, even when the officer is holding him. So somehow he overpowers this one guy. There's four other officers there, but somehow the other four aren't standing there and they're not trying to help control the suspect. That's not how it's going to work in real life. In real life, when you're getting ready to pull a guy out of the vehicle, okay, and I might be repeating myself, you have the other guys on standby right there. Each has a role that they're going to play to control that suspect. And when that suspect gets on his feet, he takes off and running. When you look in the video, there's no officers there. There's no officers. Where's the other four guys that were there ready to help get the suspect pulled out of the car and cuffed? Where's primary? Where are the other guys? They're not standing there in that shot at that moment. And the suspect takes off running down the street. He runs in between two cars along the curb. And this officer that's wearing the body camera that tried to put the cuffs on him is chasing him down the street. And the camera's going left and right as he's running. But you can see glimpses of the suspect take off down the street, and he can see perfectly clear. He didn't run into a car. He didn't trip over the curb. His eyes are obviously working fine, and he takes off and runs out of sight as the officer's pretending to call on his radio for help. And that is the end of the scene. So I'd like everybody to understand in their mind, how is it that the suspect was hit with this direct blast of pepper spray and he was able to see and run down the street? And how was he able to evade handcuffing and the arrest of five guys that would have been on top of him the second that they pulled him out of the car? Where were they? What were they doing at that time that there was only one guy trying to effect the arrest at that moment and get the handcuffs to control the suspect? That was an extremely poor situation, sir. That's not how it goes. I've never seen anything like that. And there was a complete violation of any kind of police procedure inside of pulling the suspect out of the car. So those are very, very important keys. And I think I'll leave it at that on the traffic stop. And then there's more to talk about as we move on. But that's not how it works, sir. That's just not how it works. I don't know if you have any additional questions you want to ask about that.
Well, Danny, I find all that extremely persuasive. I'm interested in Brian's take. Brian, how do you assess Danny's critique of this as being in some fashion a bogus stop? Your thoughts?
Well, I agree in a large sense. I'm just going to point out that the officer who deployed the pepper spray actually had the can facing the wrong direction and pepper sprayed himself. And he also got part of another officer, which is why those two officers remained at the cars at the first scene. You can hear him say, "I shot myself in the face," and watch him get the water out of the car and try to wash his face while the other officers go after Nichols on foot. So I'm not sure if he took the full blast. I don't see how Nichols could have escaped those officers in that scenario unless that pepper spray was just poorly deployed and managed to pepper spray all the cops and not him. He was found a half mile away, and I think it's something like, you know, between 10 and 30 minutes. You got to remember that Nichols is just wearing a sweatshirt, and it's very cold. It's so cold out that there's frost on the ground. So even after the initial adrenaline of having been able to escape these police officers, and that particular part of his escape is just not caught on the body cam. So I'm not really sure how it went down. Then they tried to tase him. They didn't hit him with the prong. Nichols pulls off his sweatshirt, which had been hit with one of the prongs of one of the tasers that was, you know, poorly fired at him. Either it's terrible police work and these guys have it coming, or Nichols out, 29 years old, skinny black guy, overpowered these cops. It's highly unlikely that even with a modicum of training, these guys wouldn't have been able to get the cuffs on. But hey, it's an arrest. It's a relatively brutal arrest, and shit happens. So I don't know how to comment on the police procedure and the arrest. I don't know if any of my comments are even going to be helpful on it, because at the end of the day, you do see Nichols escape, pull off his sweatshirt after the taser's been deployed, and take off into the night. Later directly under a camera.
Well, let me ask Danny, if this officer sprayed himself with his pepper spray, he cannot be very experienced. I mean, that certainly suggests this might be a fake cop, Danny.
The thing is I got to tell you, I didn't notice him spraying it. I saw the pepper spray, or what appeared to be whatever the mist was, hit the suspect's face. As far as pepper spraying yourself, it's very on the nozzle when you use pepper spray. It's very obvious what direction the pepper spray is going to use and how you're going to deploy it. You actually hold it in the fist of your hand, like you would hold a firearm, and you deploy the spray with your thumb, and it goes in one direction, and it's very clear. To pepper spray yourself, you'd have to be very inexperienced, and you've never deployed. And again, when you get trained with pepper spray, you shoot at multiple targets, you practice pulling your spray out, you practice deploying the spray in different methods. Whether, a lot of times you get trained into hiding the pepper spray where the suspect doesn't even see it in your hand, and you'll distract him with one hand and hit him with the pepper spray with the other. There's many different ways, and we won't spend a lot of time on that, but there's different ways to deploy pepper spray. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to move forward to the camera shot where they actually caught him, where the fight takes place, and where they eventually get him on, get him in handcuffs now.
Mitchell, can you kill the break? Can you kill the break?
Yeah.
We're stuck with it. All right, let it play.
It's killed, Jim.
Oh, you got it. Good, Mitchell, good. Danny, continue, Danny.
Okay, so the body camera shuts off, so it was edited and it shuts down at that point. The next scene that we see is this obscure street corner that's lit by like a street light a little bit, with this camera that happens to be perfectly positioned on this street corner. And as I said before, as this event unfolds and they're fighting on the ground, I did not see myself personally. I did not see the suspect come into the shot. I saw he was out there on the corner and they were fighting. And I saw the camera actually pan to the right a little bit, kind of do a quick little focus, almost like it was on a tripod or somebody was, operating it. And I find it very strange that this kid happens to get stopped the second time and the fight breaks out right underneath this camera. Now, I'm thinking, is the entire street lined up every so many feet with these cameras? I don't think so. But what are the odds, if you look at it, that this happened to go down right underneath that obscure camera at that moment? If it would have happened 100 feet in either direction, we wouldn't have been able to catch it with this camera. Talk about luck that this happened right underneath that camera. You know what? I don't believe in that. I think that was highly suspect that camera happened to be in that street corner at that moment. And that is highly suspect for multiple reasons, but we'll go into the fight. So what we do see is we see a bunch of officers on top of the guy. They find him on the street corner and they're cuffing him. But the problem is they're punching him and they're kicking him like a gang member would beat up on a suspect. They're not using any controlled moves like a trained police officer would use. I didn't see any handholds. I didn't see any holding around the neck. No control arm, no moves on the control of his hands or his arms or his legs. What I saw is a black officer wailing away gangbanger style on another person is what I saw. And even after he was cuffed, they stood him up on his feet. Okay, and this is critical. They stood him up on his feet, and when they stood him up, one officer had a hold of him with his arm through his arms above the handcuffs, and the other black officer, as hard as he could, looked like he was punching the suspect right in the face. Okay, and he hit him several times, and I was really paused this, slowed it down to see if those were real blows, and the suspect's face does move like he's getting hit. But it doesn't move to the point to where I would think it would move if a 220 or 230 pound black man that was in that good a shape like that was punching you directly in the face. I mean, this kid is tough. He's standing on his feet and he takes at least 5 to 6 direct blows right to the face with a closed fist, right to the side of the jaw to the face, and he's still standing. He doesn't even buckle. He only weighs 145 pounds. And I'm like, man, and this cop, he knows that he's cuffed. Everybody on that scene knows he's cuffed. And they all know every time that fist comes towards that suspect, that's just one longer time they're going to get in jail because they know they're all in violation. Everybody knows, sir. Everybody knows that you cannot strike a suspect after he's cuffed. It's kind of like it's more serious than hitting somebody after the bell in a boxing match. After the bell goes off, you simply don't walk over to the corner and break a chair over your opponent's head. Okay? Everybody knows you can't do that. You go to your corner. Once the suspect is cuffed, it is over. There is no more striking the suspect. There's a few different circumstances where that can be allowed in a minimal to control the suspect. And that is if the suspect is kicking violently and could strike somebody or strike an officer, if he's biting, spitting, anything like that out of control still just turns into a wild animal. Okay. You can use reasonable force to put leg irons on him, throw a spit bag over his head if you need to, whatever you need to do, but you can't continue to beat or strike a suspect full force like you're trying to knock him out or debilitate him when he's cuffed. That's completely illegal. The Supreme Court has ruled on that multiple times. That is a blatant violation, sir. It is a blatant felony to do so. And that officer knew before he threw that punch, when he was cuffed, he knew that he was going way over the line. He knew that he would be fired immediately if he seen that. No more paycheck, no more pensions, nothing but jail with each one of those punches. And he continued to do it. There's another officer after he falls on the ground that kicks him gangbanger style. And he knows he might as well have gotten his car and ran the suspect over or pulled out his firearm and took a shot and handcuffed. I mean, it is a blatant, gross violation that you would do that. And he kept kicking, and the other gentleman kept punching. After he was cuffed, he buckled and fell on the ground with another kick, and I couldn't believe it. And what I don't understand, sir, is those officers know that everybody in that scene has a body camera. How would any of those officers not trust that one of many body cameras in that scene were going to pick them up and they would be fired and go to jail later on for doing this? Were they all working together and they just knew that the body cameras weren't working? Was it such a tight group that they knew that nobody would think on anybody? I mean, can you imagine if you were an officer standing there and you weren't doing the striking and you weren't doing the hitting? In real life, one of those officers would be in such fear for his future, him going to jail, being sued, that he would run over there and protect the suspect and say, knock it off, get away. Knock it off. Leave him alone. he would try to protect the suspect because he would also be responsible for not doing anything to stop such a violent attack after the suspect was cuffed in an interview. Why did you stand there and allow that to continue? He can already hear that question in his head. But yet we have other officers there that were just observing and not doing anything to try and stop this. It was just unbelievable, gross violation. It would never happen like that. These guys acted like complete gangbangers with no police training, the way they were beating this guy up, kicking him, violently punching him after he had cuffed. It was one of the most grossest violations I've ever seen. I've seen cops go overboard before the suspect is being cuffed while they're trying to control him and get into cuffs. That's one thing. But after he's cuffed, okay, he's in custody, beating up, punching, striking, trying to hurt the suspect, trying to, you know, knock him out, trying to inflict bodily harm after he's cuffed is a gross violation of civil rights. It's well known before you hit the street, you ever get trained, that if anything ever happened like that, you would get in severe trouble. You would be punished. You would be fired. You would go to prison. That's all explained to you in the police academy before you even get into your training and you get out on the street. But yet all five of these guys threw all police training out the window and participated in this gang style beating after he was cuffed. And then they leaned him up against the car door and they didn't even try to render aid. And we can move into that. After an officer has to use physical force to take a suspect into custody, whether he hits him with a taser, whether he gets him with a pepper spray, whether he has to inflict damage on him by punching him or using his baton on him, he then has to move into a role after he's cuffed of asking the suspect, are you okay? And has to start rendering aid. And I know that's really strange to go from the violent confronter to all of a sudden going to the paramedic, but that's really how it works. Once those cuffs are on, you have to flip roles and go right into any kind of injuries that the suspect has. You would go to your car immediately and grab your med bag. You'd come back and look at the suspect. You would call for an ambulance right away to attend. So the ambulance was on rolling, coming on the scene, and you would attend to any damage. You would give him some water and try to rinse out his eyes to get the pepper spray out of his eyes. You would, if he had any cuts, anything immediate that needed to be attending, you would attend to it, okay? But what they do is they just leave him beat up after they brutally beat him after he's cuffed up against the car door unattended. And you can see him leaning against the car door, kind of moving his feet around and moving his head left and right, and nobody's attending to him. Matter of fact, one of the officers is walking around him like a shark, kind of kicking his leg, walking around in a circle, and they just leave the guy there. Another complete gross violation of police procedure. They're not even attending or trying to attend to the suspect that was just injured. So I'm just trying to say, sir, this was just procedure after procedure after procedure, police procedure, that was grossly violated all the way through this. And I'll tell you what, it just would not happen like this with trained police officers. And this, to me, lines up with the fact that when I looked into the background of these five officers, I could not find them. And then I put it together. I don't even think they're really cops. I think they used these five guys to pull off this video. I think it's five guys that they got in there. They said, you pretend to do this, you pretend to this, because they certainly weren't acting like trained police officers. They violated everything in the book that they possibly could have, sir.
That's just fascinating, Danny. Just fascinating from A to Z. Brian, your thoughts?
Well, I agree. I'm not going to argue the fact that they didn't act like regular street police officers, at least not any that I've ever seen. And they certainly, I mean, even if you go through the citizen police course, you know the basics of how an arrest like this should take place. I find gross violations everywhere in the video, and I think we need to figure out who these guys are. I just because I can find that somebody exists and has an address and has a phone number, doesn't necessarily mean they are who they claim to be. And so I'm sure that there's going to be a number of open records requests that go out. There is a website that aggregates all of these open records requests by the media. And so I'm going to go through them and see if I can find anything interesting. I've been through, you know, your typical garbage on CNN and New York Times and Wikipedia. And you know, it like I said, it appears that they're real people, whether or not they're part of this police force or not just dressed up. I don't know. I can tell you that it appeared to be unmarked cars, but they were properly equipped with the proper lights and sirens. They appeared to have the proper gear on their bodies, which wouldn't be terribly difficult. You know, I just guess I'm just saying I don't know what to think if these guys, if it was totally staged. If it was staged, they did deliver a horrific beating.
We got a caller on the line, Paul from California. Paul, join the conversation.
Yeah, very interesting discussion. I will say that once again, Danny Cirrus has engaged in extremely accurate overkill, in my opinion, because I don't really think we need much, although, of course, it's interesting to talk about. I don't think really need much after we find out that these people don't have the internet presence that they should, that they're not in the databases. It's like, okay, that's it. We're done. I mean, Miles Mathis has, you know, made so many of his papers on so many of these fake shootings, and he gets into a lot of other things as well. But the centerpiece is they don't have the internet presence. The named victims and the named shooters, or in this case, the named police officers, don't have the accurate internet data presence that they should. And that doesn't make any sense at all unless the whole thing is fake, false, phony, fraud, which of course brings to the larger point is what kind of world are we living in now? And we know what kind of world it is, where we can't count on the fact that anything that we see is true. Anything that we're presented with is accurate, and it's likely it's going to be false. And, you know, I'm just reminded of one of the better papers that he did on the Las Vegas shooting hoax, where he just took apart these names. And he said, look, what kind of name is this? I mean, the names are totally made up. He says, who has a name like this or who has a name like that? And sure enough, as I read these different names, I thought, yeah, I don't remember seeing spellings like that of first names or last names. It's just ridiculous. And as Mathis pointed out in one of his early writings, he said, if you look up me, in other words, if you look up Miles Mathis on the internet, you will find all my details are accurate down to where I went to elementary school. And as Danny has made the point so well, that's the world that we live in now, is that they have all the information. And of course, with our cell phones, they know where we are. And with our cards, when we swipe somewhere, they know what we buy and where we're buying it. So the idea that you could do a search in more than one database and not find these people, or you find maybe their name, but the age or the location or the details don't match, that's it. That's all you need to know. The whole thing's fake.
Extremely interesting. Brian, exactly what did you find? Did you find something on all five of the cops? Just expand on what you did find.
Well, I have over 100 matches on a Justin Smith. He was the hard one. So I had to finally break down and find an actual year of birth in order to get to it. But he's a little bit more obscure because there's a lot of people with that common name. I know Tiberius B. I know where he lives. Demetrius Haley.
Brian, our audio is a little mixed. I'm not hearing every word. Are you telling me you found that these people were people, not that they were cops, but that they existed and had addresses? Is that what you're telling us?
Yes, I am. But I'll also say this about what Paul just said. He's right. There's a lot in the name. And I want you to think about the name Tyre Nichols. Tyrannical. 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 Tyre Nichols. Tyrannical. As for the other one, yeah, as far as I can tell, they're real people. Again, as a private eye, my stuff is based on people trying to apply for credit or utility bills, you know, basic type of stuff where the headers end up getting sent to my sources. So I'm able to find stuff that normal people won't. And let me point out one other thing that's really common among cops. And that is a really thick book called Extreme Privacy. And now what this book is written by a guy by the name of Michael Bazell, and he specializes in helping people disappear. Now I have gone through the procedures to make people disappear, and I can guarantee you that under the right circumstances, given enough time and money, I can make somebody disappear as well. But I can't do it within 2 weeks. I need months to get it taken care of. So it could be true on both sides. Again, at the end of the day, my position is someone got beat up in that video. The fact that they chose somebody by the name of Tyre Nichols does concern me. But
Tyree.
And Danny's exactly, Tyree, whatever. Danny's exactly correct. None of the proper procedures would have been followed. And I can guarantee you that my police friend would recognize this just as well as Danny recognized it. The question is, why? What did they observe leading up to the event that caused it to happen? And if nothing, and it was staged because they, again, they knew the body cam, they knew it was all there. And it's my understanding that these people acted as a unit. So I just think it's a little early to make conclusions about it, but I can tell you that my opinion is a lot of this stuff smells really bad, really, really bad on a lot of different levels.
Just to address the one thing you just said, I would ask, okay, to make a statement, it's a little early. I don't even know what that means or why you say it. It's a little early to make. See, here's the deal. Jim knows this as well, and all the listeners know this. Everything that they show us, pretty much, you can count on, is fake, a fraud. It's designed to elicit emotions. So whether all these cops were black and the victim is black, that's not really the point anymore. They're trying to elicit the emotions. They're trying to play with us, and they're successful at doing that. I mean, when you look at how many people are talking about this, and it's featured all over social media, everybody is taking it as real. I don't ever take any of these things as real. You know, not until for sure I know it is. And the fact of the matter is today, you can be pretty much assured that almost everything you see is either incomplete truth or not truth at all. And I think Danny has made that pretty clear. And I would totally agree with him, by the way. If you can get one or two cops that know each other well, you know, something like this could happen. But when you have five cops on scene, I think Danny could verify this. Anytime you get five people or more, the five guys, there's always got to be one guy go, wait a minute, knock this off, stop this. I mean, there's going to be a guy like myself or a guy like Danny just going to step in and go, hey, knock this crap off. But the fact that they all were getting in on it and participating and that they all let it happen, that to me just says it's staged. That's just my opinion.
Do you think then that there wasn't a real, that he wasn't really, didn't have the pulp beat out of him and did not die? Is that also your conclusion?
Well, it's kind of like George Floyd, Jim, right? What did your research show on him? I mean,
yeah,
did George Floyd really die? Was George Floyd really the George Floyd we were presented with? So can you pay a guy, can you find some black guy and give them like 10 grand or 25 grand and say, okay, we're going to beat your ass. We're going to give you 30 grand. You know, you're going to find those guys all day long.
Sure.
I would like to
go back to Danny. Yeah, Danny.
I would like to point out what Paul said does make, you know, it's 100% true. They can find anybody to play this part. And just to reiterate what Brian was saying, there are people in those counties in that area with those five black officers' names. So I want to be clear about that. There are. Okay. It wasn't like there was nobody. There was one, I believe that only there was one guy, but the other two had two or more possibilities of people with that name. Okay. Two or more. But when I ran those names down and positively ID'd each person that actually says the records say live in there and have that name, I was able to positively ID that those people were not those black officers. I want to be clear about that. I was able to positively ID through photograph and other records that it was not that person. So those names do exist. If you're just doing a name search, you have to look into the background of each person to identify actually who. I'll give you an example. There's probably more than one Jim Fetzer in the United States. I've never done a search on that, but there probably is. So you'd have to look into the background of each one to see which one of those people you are looking for. Do you see what I'm saying? You'd have to look at college, sure, job, age, other things to identify, oh, this is the one I'm looking for. And this is his family. And here's the name of his family. So there's a multiple ways of doing that. Okay. So I ran down each and every person with that name. Okay. I just didn't find the name and go, oh, there's the name. There it is. Okay. Yeah. I found the name. What I'm saying was I could not find these five black officers. And anytime I look into the background of a police officer, they always have college and their law enforcement credential. I find it each and every time without fail. Just like when I looked up the chief, I found the chief's law enforcement credential, and everything about the chief, including her work history, I was able to look at. But with these five guys, what I'm going to reiterate, they came up as a total ghost, and I couldn't find one shred on any of these guys that matched the five guys in the video. Okay, I want to be very clear about that. And just to further example that, the Half Moon Bay shooting that I know you talked about, I ran that suspect, and I came up with total ghost on that suspect. And I found a few people in the state of California with that name. Okay, so I did find somebody with that name. When I ran those names down, okay, I ran them all the way down and went into the background. One of them lived in Palo Alto, California, and had a job working for a major university, and the age was wrong. Okay, the age was 20 years off of the suspect that was shown on television, not even close. When I ran through all of the records for Half Moon Bay, not one person came up remotely with that first and last name, not even close, but they came up in the city of Palo Alto. The other two gentlemen that came, actually there were three more names that came up. There were four total. Three came up, they were in Southern California, 6 to 7 hour drive from Half Moon Bay, quite a ways away, right, several hundred miles away. And one of them was in one particular town in Southern California. I don't need to say the name. And the other two were in another town. And when I ran them down and looked at their age, their work history, and everything about them, I found it was very strange that those three were all the same person, and they all had a job as a CEO of a multinational company. So I knew for sure it was not this mushroom farmer in Half Moon Bay that they kept telling us on the media that lived for a long time residence as Half Moon Bay. So in other words, he had a cell phone, an automobile, he had a driver's license, he had all these electronic leashes that would tie him to the area. He in no way could be associated with this multinational CEO that lived in Southern California, or the other younger gentleman that lived in Palo Alto, California, that worked for a prestigious university. I could see his degree, his job history, his car, everything about him. So I knew, sir, that we were dealing with a ghost at that point.
Yeah, go ahead,
Danny,
Paul.
Go ahead, Paul. So I think it's important to make the simple point that Danny is making in his usual very thorough and overkill fashion, okay? is that these, all these individuals that you, okay, for example, you named, you know, more than one Jim Fetzer, just like, you know, probably more than one Danny Cirrus. Of course, just like there's more than one, you know, Ford F-150 truck. Okay. But what is, here's the thing. They're all going to be accurate based upon who and what it is you're talking about. So in other words, when you look up Jim Fetzer, even if there's more than one, you will find the one that matches, the one in Madison, Wisconsin, that's a retired professor, and so on and so on. I mean, in other words, these databases are accurate. I've had background checks done on me for jobs I've had, and I'm the one that they're looking at, okay? I'm the one that went to, you know, San Jose City College, and, you know, that I worked here and I worked there, and my age and my Social Security number. So these people, when, you know, there's confusion about it, oh, it's the wrong location, or the year is a 20 years different, that's all you need to know. Okay, it's not an, these databases are accurate. They know exactly.
Sir, I have one more point.
I want to make.
This is critical, and Brian might or might not have noticed this, and this is on the Half Moon Bay. When the guy decided to turn himself in, the supposed shooter on the TV decided to turn himself in, this is the media telling us a story. On the off chance, he decided to drive himself to a very small sheriff's deputy substation in the Half Moon Bay area, which is located in a very small strip mall. It's a little office with a couple of desks in it, the substation. And he decided to go there and turn himself in, okay? But here's what's key. When he turned himself in, okay, he pulls into the parking lot, and he would walk into the substation and say, hey, guys, you're looking for me. I did a bad thing. I'm sorry. Put the cuffs on me here. I'm here to turn myself in. But that's not what happened, okay? When he turned himself in, we see four or five police officers, a few of them in uniform, a few of them in plain clothes, and we see them pull him down to the ground with their weapons drawn, and pull him down in the parking lot of this little tiny substation strip mall where there's other businesses. But there happened to be two full-blown news crews in the parking lot with their cameras rolling and cueing these guys to go ahead and make the arrest, catching this all on video. Now, think about this. Think about this, sir. Did the suspect get on his...
Just an amazing coincidence. One of the most fascinating conversation we've ever had on the show. Brian, Danny, Paul, thank you all. Sensational. I loved every minute of it. We'll be back on Friday with more of What You Need to Know.
Revolution Radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and